ABC News, World News This Week. I'm John Grimes, ABC News. Listen.
Treat them like anybody else. Treat them, you know, don't act afraid of them. Because you're just like anybody else.
This consignment, if it was bolted together, could form the barrel of a very large gun. And as such, it is subject to our export controls.
It has been a long, hard race. I have seen demolition derbies much like...
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
Our competition is what lies outside the doors of the building. Our competition is the street.
The ideal club worker is someone who really cares and identifies with the children, and it goes beyond this is a job, it's a life.
You're listening to the men and women of the Boys and Girls Club.
You know we're going to be open at 3 o'clock, and we're going to be there at 9:30. And every day the place is packed.
They know it's a warm, comfortable environment. They know they have somebody there who will listen to them.
The men and women of the Boys and Girls Club perform minor miracles every day.
Who passed Johnny in the back and at the same time tells him he's wrong? Sad member can do it. Parents sometimes would have a more difficult job.
And one of the things that we do continuously is educate our kids against drugs.
Nobody performs any magic. There's no magic. But we do touch lives.
We could do more if we had more. Support your local Boys and Girls Club, the club that beats the streets. Last Sunday's announcement from the hospital in Indianapolis had been expected.
Brian White died this morning. Approximately 7:20 a.m.
The 18-year-old who raised the country's awareness of what AIDS is and what it's not had been in a coma for several days. His doctor was Martin Kleinman.
He loved life and he didn't like to be sick. He wanted that opportunity and we tried to give it for him. We were unsuccessful.
However, Ryan's short life was immensely successful. It's traced for us by ABC's Tim O'Donnell.
He was just a 13-year-old kid from an average mid-American town when Ryan White learned he had AIDS. He got the virus from a blood clotting substance used to treat his hemophilia, but the boy was treated as an outcast, barred from his school in Kokomo, Indiana.
Well, I think they were scared first and foremost, and it just led to where, you know, their fear just took control of them, and they just believed what they wanted to believe.
The Whites fought a long court battle to get him readmitted to the schools, and they won. Though the family later moved to the nearby town of Cicero. 2 years ago, Ryan told the White House Commission on AIDS his life was far different after the move.
My studies are important to me. I even made the honor roll just recently with 2 A's and 2 B's. I'm just one of the kids. And all because the students at Hamilton High School listened to the facts, educated their parents and themselves, and believed in me.
During his 6-year battle with AIDS, the youth was in and out of hospitals, but Ryan told an interviewer he never feared death.
I believe that when you die, you go to a better place. I mean, I believe in God and everything, and I'm not really afraid of dying.
And Carrie Van Dyke, a family spokeswoman, says he was an inspiration.
That young man has taught me more about courage and the will to live and life and death and just, you know, I could never imagine learning that much from anybody else.
His battle against AIDS and the fear and prejudice that can accompany it made White a symbol. The teenager helped publicize the message the disease is not spread through casual contact. And Ryan White said he hoped his experience teaches society a lesson about people with AIDS.
Treat them like anybody else. Treat them, you know, don't act afraid of them. Because you're just like anybody else.
Members of the choir at Ryan's school in Cicero, Indiana, sang for the 1,500 people at the funeral. The First Lady, Michael Jackson, Elton John, Phil Donahue were among the celebrities there, as were many of his friends, and people who didn't know him personally, but just stopped by.
Young as he is, the things he's done and accomplished in his life is really a tribute, and it's worth my time to say goodbye, I guess.
The eulogy was delivered by the Reverend Ray Probasco, who likened Ryan White's life to the biblical story of Daniel in the lion's den and said it should be a model for all.
Dare to be a Daniel, dare to stand alone. Dare to have a purpose, dare to make it known. Ryan did. And we too have chosen to begin standing. Standing and struggling to find a cure. And with God's help and each of yours, We'll make AIDS a disease, not a dirty word.
Independence is a word Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev doesn't like to hear, where Lithuania is concerned. And in the most recent war of words with that Baltic state, Gorbachev has threatened to cut off supplies of such items as oil and gas if the Republic does not rescind its declaration of independence from Moscow's rule. Lithuania's leaders say they'll spend the weekend enjoying the Easter holiday before responding. One of the darker episodes of World War II was the massacre of some 15,000 Polish officers in the Katyn Forest near the Soviet city of Smolensk. For decades, the Soviets said the Nazis were to blame. Now, following Mikhail Gorbachev's call for scholars and journalists to fill in the so-called blank spots in Soviet history, the Kremlin has blamed its own.
The sum of evidence points to the responsibility for the crime resting on the then command of the NKVD.
Moscow Radio making the announcement of the secret police's involvement and issuing a formal apology to the Polish people.
The Soviet side expressed deep regret over the tragedy and described it as one of the worst Stalinist outrages.
The foreign minister of Poland acknowledged the admission and said it would make dealing with the Kremlin somewhat easier.
We have many problems to discuss and clarify with the Soviet Union. And it clears the way for raising other issues, and it makes our relationship more sincere and more normal.
It seemed to be a week for tidying up loose ends. When the new East German parliament met, ABC's Peter Laufer says it too revised history.
The new East German government wasted no time reversing 40 years of official policy and apologizing to Jews worldwide for the Holocaust. The old communist government had blamed the West for Nazi crimes, claiming the East Germans had opposed Hitler. Today's statement said East Germans were saddened and shamed by World War II.
The acknowledgement impresses an official of the National Conference of Christians and Jews, Harry Robinson.
For them now to come forward and make this apology, I think augurs well for reconciliation and for healing in that area of the world.
Much healing remains to take place in another area of the world, the Middle East. And of late, the sore spot has been Iraq. Following last month's accusation that Iraq was trying to smuggle nuclear triggers from the U.S. through Britain, comes another allegation from London. Customs there says that large sections of pipe ordered by Iraq are more than they appear to be.
This consignment, if it was bolted together, could form the barrel of a very large gun, and as such, it is subject to our export controls.
If put together, the gun would have a barrel some 130 feet long. Nonsense, says the British maker of the pipe.
What we made were a series of tubes. And, they're not like any sort of a gun.
British customs officer Douglas Tweddle remains unconvinced.
It could be that the manufacturer, in good faith, has produced something which the customer had very different ideas about.
Such as using a huge artillery piece to launch shells containing poisonous gas, which Iraq has in its arsenal. The allegation is poo-pooed by Iraq's ambassador to Britain.
I categorically deny this. They are just five.
For a petrochemical plant, says the ambassador. Iraq's president Saddam Hussein told a group of U.S. senators that he would dismantle his chemical weapons if Israel, Iran, and other Middle East states do the same. And as Senator Bob Dole said,
He indicated to us that he feels very strongly there's an American, British, Israeli campaign to tarnish the image of his government and his country.
Dole and the other senators have told Hussein such is not the case. Another of the week's stories from the Middle East involved the release of a French woman, her Belgian companion, and the daughter they conceived while being held hostage by the terrorist group led by Abu Nidal. Their release came in Lebanon, nearly 3 years after the man and woman were abducted from a yacht in the Mediterranean Sea. The Abu Nidal group has the backing of Libya, and the French government negotiated their release directly with representatives of Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. According to ABC's chief diplomatic correspondent, Pierre Salinger, the French had a bargaining chip.
The French government recently returned to Libya three Mirage fighting aircraft, which they've been holding in France since 1986 in anger over the Libyan incursion into Chad. It is believed that the return of these three aircraft played a key role in the release of these hostages.
The government of President Francois Mitterrand is taking some heat in the French media for dealing with Gaddafi
and for the thanks it is heaped on him for the part he played in the hostage release. In another development in the Middle East, the coalition that Israeli Labor Party leader Shimon Peres thought he had fell through moments before he was to present his new government to Parliament, and Peres has been given another couple of weeks to put together a new coalition. In the U.S., big business seems more and more willing to form a coalition with environmentalists. Some recent examples: Conoco has broken ranks with other big oil companies and says it will order only twin-hull tankers in the future. It's believed that had the Exxon Valdez had a double hull, last year's Alaskan oil spill might have been smaller than it was. Several oil companies are coming out with cleaner-burning gasoline. Heinz, the big food company, has come out with a 100% recyclable plastic bottle for its ketchup. Plastic that can't be recycled is a big problem in landfills. Heinz and its subsidiary, Starkist, have responded to concerns about the thousands of dolphins that are killed by the nets tuna fishermen use.
Starkist will not purchase any tuna caught in association with dolphin. Starkist will sell only dolphin-free tuna.
Chicken of the Sea and Bumblebee followed suit, making environmentalists such as Leslie Sheely of Greenpeace happy.
What they have done today is set an example to the world to say that tuna that is caught at the expense of dolphins is unacceptable.
The decision bothers tuna fishermen such as Ken Peake, who says that countries not bound by the new policy will keep using the nets.
They're going to force all these boats out of here to countries that don't have any laws and any rules, so there'll be more boats for them to kill more porpoise.
An estimated 100,000 dolphins are killed each year, some 80,000 of those by foreign tuna fishermen. One of the country's most aggressive anti-smoking efforts is underway in California, where money from the state's new cigarette tax is paying for ads to counter those used to promote smoking. The tobacco industry's Brennan Dawson is understandably upset.
I think that there needs to be some serious debate over whether or not this is anti-smoking material or whether it's a punitive mudslinging industry.
The head of California's health department, Dr. Kenneth Kaiser, says he's tired of seeing people duped by the slick ads and commercials.
We want people to see what tobacco use really is. It's dumb, it's dirty, and it's deadly.
In a related anti-smoke effort, California's anti-smog hotline is burning up with calls made by people turning in motorists whose tailpipes belch visible fumes. What else isn't safe along with the food you eat, the beverages you drink, and the air you breathe? How about the roof over your head? A new survey by the National Association of Home Builders says that heat conditions common to most roofs has an adverse effect on fire-retardant plywood.
It turns brittle, and it does lose its strength. It's at the point where you can't nail a shingle onto it. If a shingle falls off, you can't nail a shingle onto it because the hammer will go right through.
That's Richard Kenny, a lawyer for a homeowners association in New Jersey, whose development was the first to trace the problem of disintegrating roofs to FRTP, or fire-resistant treated plywood. The plywood has been used in a million or so housing units east of the Mississippi since the early 1980s. Many lawsuits have been filed against makers, suppliers, and insurers. The dust has settled in the runoff for the Democratic nomination for governor in Texas.
It has been a long, hard race. I have seen demolition derbies much like...
That's Ann Richards, who beat Attorney General Jim Maddox in the runoff, a campaign which was marked by mudslinging. Richards now faces Republican Clayton Williams in the November race for governor. And Williams says the voters have a real choice.
Richards is a liberal, is proud of it. I'm a conservative, I'm proud of it. So there'll be less of a personality contest and more a delineation on the issue.
One of those issues is abortion rights, which Williams opposes and Richards supports. New Hampshire Governor Judd Gregg has made his position known. He vetoed a bill on abortion rights only hours after it reached his desk.
The bill that passed the House would put New Hampshire in the position of having the most liberal abortion law in the country. Would allow for abortions throughout the term of the pregnancy, basically without any limitation for the first 7 months for sure, and even after that, in the health of the mother, which is a very ambiguous term. And in addition, of course, there's no limitations relative to parental consent or parental notification.
Gregg's veto came 2 weeks after Idaho Governor Cecil Andrus vetoed a bill that would have created the most restrictive abortion rights law in the country. The strike by drivers against Greyhound has been punctuated by violence since it began early in March. And now the bus line has filed a $30 million lawsuit against the union. Greyhound's Anthony Lanny says the strike is an attempt to disrupt interstate travel by criminal means, and that the company can back up its charges.
We have evidence of union meetings at which shooting at buses was actually discussed before the strike was called. The only statement that was made by union officers present during that discussion was, if you do it, be sure you don't get caught. Don't even tell your best friend.
Just this past week, two more striking Greyhound drivers were arrested for shooting at a bus in Illinois and are suspected of another incident in Missouri.
We did search one of the arrestees' residence and recovered a .22-caliber revolver, which is believed to be used in both of the shootings that occurred on March 22nd.
That's Agent Jerry Miller, who says that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms is looking into more than 30 shootings. All told, three drivers have been arrested in connection with those incidents. Verdict in New Jersey in a case solved in part by a TV show.
With regards to count one, Al Melis, how do you find a defendant? Not guilty, guilty of murder in the second degree.
Guilty of murder in the first degree.
The jury found John List guilty of murdering his wife, his mother, and his three teenage children at their Westfield, New Jersey home 18 years ago. Eleanor Clark prosecuted the case.
I think justice was done, and the fact that the defendant was so clever and devious in his plan to elude apprehension, the justice delayed, it wasn't denied.
List had fled after the murders, remarried, and was living the quiet life of an accountant in Virginia when his case was reenacted on the TV show America's Most Wanted. A viewer saw it, made the connection, and told police to check out the man known locally as Robert Clark. A murder charge has grown out of last year's U.S. strike into Panama, and we hear about it from correspondent Mark Brender.
Army sources say First Sergeant Roberto Bryan was charged in Fort Bragg with one count of premeditated murder and three counts of assault while he was in Panama during Operation Just Cause last December. Sources say Bryan allegedly shot a Panamanian man with his M16 rifle at a roadblock 3 days after the invasion began. Officials say, if convicted, Bryan could face death or life imprisonment. Sources say these are the most serious charges brought against a soldier from the Panama operation. Mark Brender, ABC News, The Pentagon.
Postponement at the Kennedy Space Center, where the Shuttle Discovery and its crew were all set to take a powerful new telescope into space. A defective valve in Discovery's steering system stopped the countdown just 4 minutes shy of liftoff. When the mission does get off the ground, the $1.5 billion Hubble telescope will be orbited, something Albert Bogus and other scientists have been waiting for the past 7 years.
From 300 miles up, we'll be able to see stars and other stellar and extrastellar kinds of objects with a clarity nearly 1,000 times better than your naked eye.
If all goes well, NASA hopes to launch Discovery and its cargo on April 25th. Are we entering the Pepsi Stoli generation? Could be. Correspondent Rick Indeperth explains.
It will be the largest consumer deal ever between an American corporation and the Soviet Union. The agreement calls for Pepsi-Cola to double its bottling capacity in the Soviet Union, making its soft drink far more available to this nation of 280 million thirsty consumers. Through a barter arrangement negotiated some time ago, Pepsi will take its profits out of the country in the form of Stolichnaya vodka, the sales of which are expected to double in the U.S. And for the first time, the Soviets are sweetening the deal for Pepsi, throwing in the leasing rights for 10 Soviet tankers and freighters. The value of this new trade agreement, more than $3 billion. Rick Indeferth, ABC News, Moscow.
We have an update on the census, and it's disappointing for the headcounters in Washington. The director of the census, Barbara Bryant, says that since the tally began a few weeks ago, only 57% of us have checked in. The goal is 70%, and Bryant says if that isn't reached, it'll cost taxpayers plenty.
For each 1% of the mail return that falls below our projected 70% rate, we will need an additional $10 million to hire, train, and pay enumerators to count America on the doorsteps.
People cite a variety of reasons for not responding, but in some cases, it's the government's fault. Some people never get forms to fill out. such as the mayor of St. Paul, Minnesota, Jim Scheibel.
I kept waiting for the form to come, and I've been going around the city promoting everybody to get their census form, and kept waiting for mine, and then the deadline came, and I said I never got a form.
But being the responsible citizen that the mayor is, he called the folks at the census, and the form was promptly dispatched. Well, at any rate, it's in the mail. Better late than never, that story when World News This Week continues in a moment.
Hey, Mom. Mom.
Don't point now, Bobby.
Look at that man over there. He's got thick glasses.
Yeah, he does.
Can't they see to eat without them?
I guess not.
In this world, there are many types of disabilities.
Hey, Mom. Look, what's that lady got in her ear?
That's a hearing aid, honey.
Some disabilities are so commonplace, we barely notice them.
Oh, here comes her father. We can order now.
Dad!
Hey, sport, you hungry?
Can I have a ride in your wheelchair, Dad?
Well, how about we eat first, okay?
But everyone with a disability has one thing in common. They don't want special treatment. They just want equal treatment.
Hey, Dad, what are those people doing with their hands?
Oh, that's sign language, son. They're talking.
That's why every year, Easter Seals helps over 1 million people overcome the limitations of their disabilities so they can get on with their lives.
Dad, if I know sign language, could I talk with my mouth full?
Bobby. So.
Give the power to overcome. Give to Easter Seals.
Neither strike, nor in this year's case, lockout, has stayed these careers from their appointed round.
Program! Go ahead and line up!
The cry of the vendor filled the stands of the nation's ballparks this past Monday, as the 1990 Major League Baseball season got underway, a week late because of the owner's lockout, and apparently not to the detriment of the players. For the first time in 14 years, two pitchers combined for the season's first no-hitter.
Believe me, this is not even close to the way I envisioned it. I was just hoping to, you know, throw five strong innings and take it from there. And I'm very fortunate and grateful that I was able to go seven, and defense was great behind me.
Mark Langston of the California Angels, who along with Mike Witt, no-hit the Seattle Mariners, one zip. In Atlanta, one of the longest streaks in the history of Braves baseball came to an end at the home opener.
Oh, I'm not going to make it tonight. I really don't think I'll be able to go until June.
And for Pearl Sandow, that is truly disappointing. Pearl has seen every one of the Braves' home games since the team moved to Atlanta from Milwaukee in 1966, all 1,899 of them. Now, since the Braves are not one of the winningest teams, that might discourage a person of lesser mettle. But is Pearl ever crestfallen over a loss?
Maybe I was, but by the time I got to the top of the steps, I had forgotten that game and just looked forward to the next one.
And Pearl said that she would have been in seat 1, row 9, section 105, the same seat she's always had, except for that doggone traffic accident that broke both her shoulders. That, friends, is a fan. And those are the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Longin. Engineering by Don Bailey and Joanne Brancali. I'm John Grimes, ABC News, New York. World News This Week is a presentation of ABC News.